Well, that's all the time we have time for today on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, please drive carefully wherever you go and whatever you do. And thanks for being, thanks for joining us. That's all the broadcast today. Sorry you tuned in an hour late, but, okay. I cannot put any commitment into April 1st, even if it is the day after, change the clock and people have, you know, people are delicate and they're vulnerable. But, so long, everybody. We'll see you next. No, I can't. I just, no motivation for it at all. It's a holiday for the civilians, isn't it? So go have fun. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of which, we now know, well, we know a couple of things we didn't know before. The Chinese, bumped into a super secret American, what should we call it? Spy aircraft. And, now we're concerned that the Chinese may board it. They may already have boarded it by the time you hear this. Because it's daylight savings time. And they may learn all our secrets. Gee, can we arrest Wen Ho Lee again? Because he could have been piloting that plane, remote control. And we know something else, too, that Slobodan Milosevic is in jail. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it was no more than 48 hours ago that when the Yugoslav government, under pressure from the United States Congress, of all places, under threat that aid would be withdrawn if Slobodan Milosevic were not taken into custody, the Yugoslav government announced its intention to knuckle under and do just that. And Mr. Milosevic, indicted as in absentia as a war criminal in The Hague, announced from his redoubt at his home that they'd never take him alive. As I say, 48 hours later, he is very much alive and in jail in, I guess, the capital of Yugoslavia, whatever that is. You know, it's daylight savings time. I'm sleep deprived. And is probably going to be put on trial in Yugoslavia for fraud, you know, and plundering the government, and not to be to be sent over to The Hague for the war. But that's all. We know all that. Here's my beef, ladies and gentlemen. This behavior, yeah, war crimes. Okay, fine. But this behavior by President Milosevic, former President Milosevic, just goes another step further in sapping people's credibility in the words of their leaders. And it's sad and it's unnecessary. So I don't know if they have internet connections in the jails in Yugoslavia, and if former president, I would imagine he's got a computer. You know, they got to be treating him kind of well. If President Milosevic is listening, listen, next time you say they won't be taking you alive, please make sure you go out feet first. Not for my sake, not for your sake, but for the sake of people's ability to believe in the system, won't you? That's a plea from Hello, welcome to the show. Now I get it, just switched on the light. What I saw made me turn around and fight. That procession, on your hands and knees, and your expression got me jumping to my feet. I know it's getting serious. What makes a man react to feelings he can't deny? Get up, shake it loose.
come on, 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 come on. Can you sorry? Can you picnic? Can you sorry? Can you picnic? Come on, come on and sorry.
Listen to the Bob White. He never could sing right.
You should hip him to the latest sound and the talk that's going round.
Well, I was talking to the parakeet, and he said, man, now about that beat.
How about that beat?
Hey, Bob White, ain't you gonna swing tonight?
Several people heard the albatross.
Yes.
Whisper, Robert is on the song.
I know for a fact he's on the wagon.
Bob White, nothing but a neophyte.
John, what does that word mean?
Amateur.
Even the pheasant found it unpleasant hearing you hit that flat note.
Whereas the sparrow froze to his marrow when he heard that note.
The opinion of the tufted grouse is you play to an empty house.
Could happen to anybody.
You're good. Get up,
off that pan. Shape up, make it dance, Bob White. You gotta sing it out tonight. Take a letter to the meadow lark in reply to his rude remark.
Well, the mails must go through.
Bob White invites you to a bash tonight.
My tux isn't even pressed. Take a wire to the Nightingale. I tell him Bob ain't begun to wail. Bob White's gonna put him down for spite.
Circulate the word, call up the catbird, tell that old fat bird he's gonna sing a storm up.
Hip the canary, it'll be scary after the warm up.
Man, he's even gonna gas the goose. He'll be a looser than Dr. Seuss.
Wait a minute, John. Do I detect a note of meaning that he's gonna be right in tune?
Man, I'm telling you, he's gonna be on the moon.
I see. Bob White, he's gonna ball it up tonight.
Oh, he's in there.
Oh, he whistles pretty.
Yeah, like a bird.
What?
Here's a wire from the Albatross.
Sounds urgent.
It reads Robert is still the boss.
Well, thank you very much, folks.
Bob White, he was in the groove tonight.
I quote directly from the Whooping Crane. He says, man, it was like insane.
He made it plain.
Bob White really fought a groovy fight. I thought I had him dead in the third round.
Hey, old Papa Redbird, who is the head bird, says you were in there swinging.
He was trying. Even a jackdaw flew out the back door, bucking and winging.
You instigated such a swinging gig that all them quadrupeds want to dig.
Yeah, yeah. You mean,
Here come the moose and elk.
And there goes Lawrence Welk.
Bob White.
Bob White.
Bob White. You really sang it out tonight.
Oh, it's for the birds.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to the show. Thanks for public television, or else nobody would know what that the Lawrence Welk reference in that song meant. But, of course, thanks to public television, they're still running Lawrence Welk shows. Have you noticed that? It's a big fundraiser for public television. That and John Tesh, isn't it? Hey, happy April 1st. Ladies and gentlemen, first things first, some old business. Dear Mr. Shearer, on your March 18th show, you featured Ralph the Talking Computer reading Larry King's column, which ended with a collection of trivia facts. You then mentioned somebody busted Larry for stating that the names of the 50 states appear in the Lincoln Memorial when, in fact, only 48 do. I thought the trivia facts sounded familiar. That's because Larry apparently cut and pasted the entire thing from an internet trivia website. This is, in fact, how he got busted on the Lincoln Memorial trivia. He failed to cut and paste the entire sentence, quote, all 50 states are listed across the top of the Lincoln Memorial on the back of the $5 bill, unquote. One can only imagine the scene in Larry's office when he chewed out his minimum wage intern for incorrectly appropriating content. Okay, thank you. Thank you, listener Jesse. And last week I read the legal mumbo-jumbo from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences saying that if you are not recognized by the Academy as a hard news entity, you could not use excerpts from the Oscar cast. I'm not going to challenge them. They have not yet sent my recognition as a hard news entity. I don't need lawsuits from the Academy. I really don't. I mean, I could play an excerpt of Julia Roberts not thanking Aaron Brockovich, but anyway, just to show that the Academy is not alone. Well, when none of us are, no man is an island. Quote, this is a handout photo released on Tuesday, March 27th, 2001, by the British Broadcasting Corporation showing a computer-generated image of what Jesus may have looked like. The photo is a part of a BBC documentary television series attempt at a purely scientific investigation into the Messiah of Christendom. For the series, this computer-generated image was created to suggest what Jesus' face might have looked like, contrary to the fair-skinned and fine-featured image familiar since medieval times. Mandatory credit, BBC, one-time use only, no archives, no sales. This copyright image may be used only to publicize the current BBC programs or other BBC output. Any other use whatsoever without specific prior approval from the BBC may result in legal action. That's right. The real picture of Jesus cannot be used without the express written consent of the BBC. It might as well be Major League Baseball, ladies and gentlemen, for all that's worth. Here's the picture, right here. Okay, BBC, sue me, okay? Sue me. Here's the picture, right here, right in front of my face. Okay. Looks like me, interestingly enough. I should sue me. And Major League Baseball is getting tough on newspapers and internet publishers that are doing sort of real-time play-by-play. Baseball wants to own baseball. And you know what I say? Let them. But that's just me. And this is just me. It's all just me. Paul McCartney, ladies and gentlemen, has purchased Courtney Love's Hollywood Hills home for about $4 million. The former member of the Beatles. Hey, what about Wings? What about Wings? Bought the French country-style house on nearly 2 acres because he was tired of staying in hotels when he's in L.A., according to industry sources. What industry? Hotel industry? Real estate industry? Record industry? He and his late wife spent many days at their ranch in Tucson, but lived primarily in a farmhouse in England. Love, who bought the home from Ellen DeGeneres in 1997, put the four-bedroom, 4,700-square-foot house on the market in February because she planned to spend more time in New York, where she bought a loft in November, 4,200 square feet. She loses 500 square feet, but she's in New York. Who needs 500 square feet when you've got Zabar's? The rocker actress plans to keep a smaller home in L.A. The home McCartney bought appeals to celebrities largely because of its seclusion and privacy. Built in 1938 and recently refurbished, it has a long gated driveway and stone walls. It also has mature trees, unlike the residence, and a pool, excuse me. Okay, and Loretta Swit. Thank you, Loretta. You retain your privacy. And Larry Ellison. This is from an Australian newspaper, I believe. Tough to tell. Larry Ellison, the man snapping at the heels of Bill Gates to become the world's richest man, has spent, this is a British newspaper, $120 million on his Silicon Valley home, and the price is rising. So for those of you who think the tech bubble is over, pay attention. Ellison, who's a founder and head of the firm Oracle, has always dueled with Gates. Having the most extravagant home is the latest bout in the conflict. 5 years ago, Ellison bought a 23-acre site in Woodside, regarded as the most expensive real estate in America. The plot, the piece of land, cost $35 million. He's already spent $60 million building a Japanese imperial villa and gardens. The final cost could reach $150 million when it's finished in 2003. About 81,000 cubic feet yards of earth were shifted to create the property, enough to raise a football field 45 feet into the air. He's not doing that. The largest lake on his property, the largest lake. What's your largest lake? Hands? The largest lake on Larry Ellison's property is 2.7 acres, fed by 8 waterfalls. It holds 3.9 million gallons of water. More than 500 mature Japanese cherry trees have been imported, with 20,000 shrubs and 5,000 tons of giant boulders, one of which has been scooped out to form a whirlpool bath, while another is being made into a bathroom. Boulders. You got to scoop out to make it do it. You couldn't buy tile. You got to scoop out boulders to do a bath. The home is made of 10 buildings linked by bridges, and the roofs are of 18-inch thick Japanese grasses. The gardens feature... This is Larry Ellison, head of Oracle. Won't you buy some Oracle products today and help support this? The gardens feature a replica of the Shokintei Tea House at the Katsura Royal Compound in Kyoto, built in the 1600s. On the market, it would be the most expensive house in the country, and when Oracle's stock plummets, it will be. Bill Gates' compound, valued at $100 million, has parking for 28 cars and an artificial stream with salmon. So far, the salmon are real, but they're working on it. The building is set over an acre, and the kitchen floor tiles include real fossils. An architect on Ellison's project said Ellison has incredible vision and has been fearless in trying new things. Bruce Dodd, a San Francisco architect, said successful people have a rivalry. It's interesting if it's expressed in architecture. Ellison, of course, was one of the driving forces behind the Justice Department's decision to try to break up Microsoft. He cuts a tanned Playboy dash, wearing Armani suits and driving exotic sports cars. He was originally named by Forbes as the second richest businessman working in the industry behind Bill Gates. Ellison has fitted his home with the latest electronic gadgetry. Oh, all right. So maybe he's listening. Hi, Larry. Invite me over. I'd like to see it. And finally, following up last week's bright idea. Somebody's making a million right now, inventing this. I thought it up, but I'm giving it to the public for free. The digital data pad for hotel showers, so you never again have to figure out, how the heck does this work? And you get your chosen temperature and your chosen water pressure at the punch of one key on the keypad. All right? I'm just reviewing that for those of you who missed last week's broadcast. All right, the technology already exists. This from a listener. The J. Allure bathing system treats you to dual multifunction shower heads, 8 invigorating body sprays, and soothing steam, as well as a full-size whirlpool bath with 4 Power Pro body jets and 2 lumbar jets. An electronic control panel enables you to fully customize your shower. The built-in stereo CD system has 4 speakers and an optional television monitor. So, and it apparently has a big red scram switch that you can hit in case the computer decides to scald you. This is the luxury from the luxury shower collection of J. Allure. So the only problem is it only exists for Larry Ellison at this point. So all we have to do is bring it down to normal people kind of range, and we got it. So as I say, that it's not anything. It's not that water refuses to be digitally controlled. Everybody can be digitally controlled. We're learning that. And this, on one of our favorite subjects, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know about you, but I do know about me. In the latest example of one rule, this is from a British newspaper that is not owned by Rupert Murdoch. In the latest example of one rule for Rupert Murdoch, another one for everybody else, the media tycoon has been allowed to buy into China's information revolution in clear violation of Chinese law. We're speaking, of course, of Rupert Murdoch, American citizen. American citizen, I said. Mr. Murdoch's News Corporation thwarted in its attempt to expand into U.S. satellite TV with the purchase of DirecTV, that apparently is off, has agreed to take a 12.5% stake in China Netcom for about $300 million. Oh, he's got $300 million. I didn't know. It's jointly investing with investment banker Goldman Sachs, but local analysts say News Corporation will be the biggest gainer as it'll be able to sell programming and information services direct to China's fast-growing base of Internet users. Hi, China. China Netcom is building the country's first broadband network. There's one slight problem with the deal, according to Britain's independent newspaper. It's illegal. Chinese telecommunications law prevents foreign investors from owning any part of the country's basic telecom network, which is defined as including China Netcom. All he has to do is become a Chinese citizen. I mean, he's an American citizen. And he became one just, well, we know why. The Beijing government has promised to change the law as part of its reforms to allow it to join the World Trade Organization. But the new law has not even been put forward for discussion. Any changes are not expected for at least another year. Even the normally bland official news service in Beijing noted, quote, the deal is significant because it is not entirely legal, unquote. Well-connected sources point to 2 factors behind Beijing's decision to bend the rules for Rupert Murdoch. One is the overt kowtowing by News Corporation to Beijing. We talked about that last week. The attack on opponents of the Beijing government by Rupert's son, James. And the second factor is the involvement of Zhang Mianheng, the son of the Chinese premier in China Netcom. And the third is Rupert's decision to become a Chinese citizen. Right after he passes the American citizen. No, he's past that. He's an American citizen. Please, ladies and gentlemen. But, you know, it's not entirely legal, quote the Chinese. But they don't care that much about legality, do they? They don't care much about people breaking Chinese law, do they? I don't know. And, ladies and gentlemen, finally, at the top of this week's news, the latest on digital television. The Senate, state Senate in the state of Georgia, has passed a bill giving broadcasters a tax exemption for buying digital television equipment. Yes, I'll read that again. The Georgia State Senate has passed a tax exemption for broadcasters who buy digital television equipment. The tax exemption for consumers buying digital televisions. Where's that? Is that stalled in committee? Is that stillborn? Is that a figment of my imagination? Yes, it is. And the new head of the Federal Communications Commission, the son of Colin Powell, Michael Powell, when asked about digital television, admitted this week that the transition to digital television was taking longer than the agency had predicted. No. Quote, "How successful we are depends on how you define success. Our expectations about deployment are exaggerated," he said, adding the transition largely depends on consumers embracing the technology. Won't you go hug a digital TV today, ladies and gentlemen, please? Now, remember all the hooting when Bill Clinton said, "It all depends on what your definition of is. All right, here's the head of the Federal Communications Commission on digital television. "How successful we are depends on how you define success."
I love to watch the moonlight with arms about you. And right from the start, there's love in my heart. The sunny afternoon light I know wouldn't do. So darling, please don't run out on my heart tonight. I love to watch the moonlight long after the dance. Come over the hill, I get such a thrill. With you, a March or June night is good for romance. Let's put our lips together, give romance a chance. Love can be so intense. I touch your hand and feel my heart grow immense. Your lips I adore, but that's because I love you just a bit more than others before. A sentimental tune might be thrilling to sing while watching the stars, especially ours. Your eyes are filled with moonlight, my heart's filled with spring. I love to watch the moonlight, so to thee I cling. So darling, please don't run out on my heart tonight. Let's put our lips together, give romance a chance. To watch the moonlight, so to thee I cling. Love can be so intense. I touch your hand and feel my heart grow immense. Your lips I adore, but that's because I love you just a bit more than others before. A sentimental tune might be thrilling to sing while watching the stars, especially ours. Your eyes are filled with moonlight, my heart's filled with spring. I love to watch the moonlight, so to thee I cling. Your eyes are filled with moonlight and my heart is filled with spring. I love to watch the moonlight, so to thee I cling.
Of course, it all depends on what your definition of winning an election is, too. Ladies and gentlemen, here's a story you may have overlooked. I know I did until now, and now I'm looking it over. Shakespeare may have written on drugs, according to new research. The bard was linked to the drug by forensic analysis of pipes found at his home at Stratford-upon-Avon. Although the evidence was circumstantial, scientists from the Transvaal Museum in Pretoria, South Africa, said the results were a revelation about drug use in 17th century England. Two of the 24 pipes they tested bore traces of cocaine, the first time the drug has been found in Europe before the 19th century. Others had traces of a hallucinogen deprived from plants, and also traces of cannabis and tobacco. The Spanish had access to cocaine at that time in the Americas, but the fact that it might have been smoked in England at that time would be a first. Dr. Francis Thackeray, a paleontologist who co-wrote the article in the South African Journal of Science, was also excited about the discovery of cannabis, although marijuana. Although hemp was widely used for ropes and even printing Shakespeare's early works, thereby saving trees, we could do that. There was little evidence that it was smoked. Apparently, no chemical analyses have been undertaken to determine what substances other than tobacco may have been smoked in England during the 17th century, Dr. Thackeray said. No chemical analysis, I guess, of the remains. Was hemp used as a hallucinogen in Elizabethan times, he asked? Notably, just 1 year before Shakespeare's birth, a writer named D'Orta had written colloquies on the simples and drugs of India, which included reference to the properties of marijuana. But one of the main arguments in support of that theory was in his work, according to Dr. Thackeray. The bard uses complex imagery of darkness, poison, and, as in Sonnet 27, a journey in his head, he said, even with the dark lady of the sonnets, a possible reference to the creative but dangerous forces of drugs. In Sonnet 76, he refers to the invention of a noted weed, which may have been a reference to cannabis. In the same sonnet, he refers to compounds strange. And the word compounds is a known reference to drugs, he said. The pipe fragments were examined using gas chromatography with the help of his co-author, Inspector Tommy Vandermerv of the South African Police Service's Forensic Science Laboratory. Wow. They were loaned by the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust, which took issue with the slur on the playwright's moral rectitude, as well as on the inevitable motion picture.
He lived to write.
Silence, my fellows! What about this? He who steals my purse steals trash, but he who steals my stash is worse. Barkeep, a round of bong water for the house.
He lived to love.
Will, where are we running?
To the stables, my dear. My kingdom for a horse. To move over. Jesus, am I blissed.
But just a few miles away, life looked very different. The shipment was going straight to England.
One of us has to go to this address.
Yes, yes. The one that can be trusted.
Mm-hmm. We may be here for a while.
And when the drug-loving writer...
And so the king says, where is this bud of Avon? And I say, not bud, bard!
Meets the world's first drug cops.
Freeze! And stay away from that cesspool!
Will! Will!
It's Shakespeare in Traffic. Two Oscar sequels join forces for one blockbuster follow-up. Joseph Fiennes, Catherine Zeta-Jones, and Michael Douglas as the actor.
No, 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 it's all wrong.
Mr. Shakespeare, maybe I could remember these lines if you tried writing while you were straight. I mean, get help, man. Go to a bleeder.
When the fun stops, the fear begins. Shakespeare in Traffic, only in theaters this summer.
Get Shakespeare in Traffic discount coupons at AutoZone while dealers last.
Here we are. They tell me it's the place to be seen. And we're watching her. And she knows it, I can guarantee that. She's a small town girl who worked until she entered the fold. Now she won't get fat, you know. She won't grow old, but she's alright. Yes, she's okay. She's just living for the moment. As long as she looks good today, then she's alright. Yes, she's okay. She's got a couple of thousand puts away. And here we are, a poolside out in paradise. She's a talking doll who's working hard to stay a trophy wife. And nothing moves, and all the girls get carried away. Well, I guess it proves there's a life after 30, and she's alright. Yes, she's okay. She's just living. Don't you know it? We're all crazy. That's what we are. We're all crazy. That's what we are. So put some cow on my face, mama. Just don't leave some scars on me. We're all crazy. That's what we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. From building design and construction, malls mutate. I'll read it for you. The unmistakable demise of the boxy enclosed malls that now litter American suburbs has as much to do with the success of new retail concepts as it does with the dearth of originality, amenity, and life in the traditional centers. Dozens of 1980s designs, oh, those bad old 1980s, have been leveled or adapted for other uses in the last 2 years, say building teams specializing in the retail sector. What remains are big box power centers, dominating the low-cost convenience segment, and a proliferation of quirky, lifestyle-oriented shopping experiences that have overtaken the realm of high-end, leisurely consumerism. The hybrid retail concepts may feature indoor-outdoor shopping, pedestrian and vehicular traffic, themed entertainment, local flavor, and lifestyle orientations. And the trend has legs. This is the most significant real estate development trend in the last 50 years, as James J. Leonard, Associate Vice President with Baltimore's RTKL Associates Incorporated. The driving force behind them, unsurprisingly, is a generation of bored empty nesters, says David Scholl, Senior Vice President with Phoenix-based developer Westcor. A lot of this, he says, is tied to the baby boom segment, people in their mid-40s to early 50s that are now buying second homes. Their days of buying toys for the kids are over. Now they're looking for special experiences in life, in vacations, dining, entertainment, and shopping. Says Stanley Greed of Callison Architecture in Seattle, consumers are reacting to the anonymity of traditional shopping centers, which all look alike. What year is this? That's me asking, not him, not Stan. Stan says all our retail projects are migrating in this direction. Ooh. Look out for migrating retail projects. Dispensing with the anchors and corridors enclosed mall formula, Westcor and others are exploring what is variously called fusion retail, hybrid malls, or retail resorts. So, this year, when you're making your vacation plans, ladies and gentlemen, why not just go to a mall? I'm sorry, a retail resort. A good idea for vacation travel planning when I read the trades for you. I don't know if you saw the story this week that Tim Russert of Meet the Press on NBC had been approached apparently behind the scenes and asked if he wanted to succeed Dan Rather as the anchor of the CBS Evening News. Dan turned 70 in October and has said publicly that he wants to be in the anchor chair on his 70th birthday. Walter Cronkite retired at the age of 65. He's still alive and well. But Tim Russert turned down the offer, apparently, according to these sources, and that sprouted a series of internet votes for people to suggest Dan Rather's replacement. Diane Sawyer was on the list. I didn't make the list, interestingly. At almost the same time, Don Hewitt, the producer of 60 Minutes, appeared at a media conference and called on CBS, NBC, and ABC to end their rivalry on the evening news and combine forces into one giant news pool to be broadcast on all three networks simultaneously. It's time for the networks to pool their newscasts into one blockbuster that could enable the networks to hold down spiraling costs and end needless duplication. He made his comments as part of a panel on the war between the business and journalism sides in American media today. He said the big three anchors, Brokaw, Jennings, and Rather, could alternate stints as anchors from week to week. They could each have 1 week of anchoring and 2 weeks of reporting out in the field. He said he didn't think competition and the need to be first helped improve the news at all. In fact, he said it was that pressure to be first that caused all major networks to botch their election night coverage. Money saved from the evening news, he said, should be plowed into shows such as Nightline, Meet the Press, and 60 Minutes. He said privately some network executives agree with him, but they probably wouldn't embrace the idea. Do I think they're going to buy into it? He said, no, I think they're going to tell me what two network executives told me when I proposed 60 Minutes. It's a lousy idea. So, so Dan may be replaced. Maybe not on his own, of his own volition. The ratings have been pretty bad for the CBS Evening News. But this, wow, this is a very bad day at BlackRock. Next here on the show.
The president says no budge on the budget. Details at 6. Now back to you, Chuck and Tyra.
Toward McCain, you know, the usual Daniel, this is a surprise.
Brother Pliant, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, nothing to thank me for, Brother Rather. I just said hello.
Well, something about the way you said it put some berries on the cornflakes. How are you, William? You're looking splendid.
Well, if there's anything to this medical science stuff, I should. What brings you to the nation's capital, Daniel? Cherry blossoms are late this year, you know.
You know, Brother Plant, I've always said, if we could somehow harness that wit of yours, you know, not defang it, but just slap a saddle on its back and make it safe for strangers, we'd have something pretty special. No, sir, We thought the president's second press conference was a story and a half. So I just slapped on my chaps and rode down here because...
Daniel, the news conference was yesterday. I filed a package on it. You ran it.
Yes, sir. Fine piece of shoe leather journalism.
I guess so, even though I just sat there and took notes.
Yes, but that was my point. To come down here day after and sniff out the mood of the place in the wake of the aftermath.
Daniel, you're here because you wanted to get out of New York.
Brother Plant, you read me like a teleprompter. Yes, sir. Black Rock and West 57th are turning into tabloid gossip pits, and here's a reality check. I happen to hail from the old school. When the anchor becomes the story, then the story is the anchor.
Well, I heard the rumors about Russert.
Oh, listen here, Hoss. Man needs to do what he has to do to get a raise out of General Electric. I can't blame him for starting that rumor any more than the prairie dog can blame Diamondback for eating him.
Well, the prairie dog's not really that vengeful a critter anyway, is it?
No, sir. Good point, and well taken. But let me give it to you, drug cop straight and armadillo hide tough. This hombre is going to be anchoring evening news on his 70th birthday, and you can take that to the bank, sign it over, and get a monster home loan against it.
Well, I think all the stories I read mentioned that, but, you know, that's October, and sweeps month comes right after it, and, you know, November is very pretty somewhere in the world. Besides, Daniel, I remember back after election night, you were the one talking about getting out of here before the Yankee home opener.
Brother Plant, it was the Mets.
Well,
you're not going to hear it. Nobody from within hailing distance of Brazos County rooting for anybody called Yankee. But seriously, Hoss, sure, I was talking about resigning on principle. But that was when I thought they knew they needed me. Now that I've seen how this organization chose to make the kind of responses that would keep this story going longer than a pubic shave at a barber college, I'm going out of CBS News one way only. Boots on and toes tagged.
That's another way of saying dead.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Dan, look, can I be candid with you? Evening News isn't where you want to be anymore. You know what's happening. The Evening News franchise is being devalued by cable, by the internet, by our own people. I mean, you saw Hewitt's suggestion that the three networks collaborate on a single newscast?
Yes, sir. I made note of that. I wonder who he thinks is experienced and talented enough to executive produce that mythical super broadcast.
Exactly, but it's not going to happen.
No, sir, although I must admit it would be a single malt kick to see this particular face on NBC's air as well.
Oh, well.
You know, Brother Hewitt and I are like this.
Still. Well, then, that's where you go, back to 60. I mean, he'd love to have you back, and at your age, you'd young up that place.
Brother Plant, if this was about me, I'd be back to 60 quicker than a fruit fly's love life. But, sir, please, and hear me out. I hope I'm not using your computer.
No, it's fine, Dave.
I just had to finish these promos before we lose the satellite.
No problem. You still write your own promos?
When I'm mad, it relaxes me. But, William, please, you saw those internet suggestions for people to replace me?
Russert, Diane Sawyer.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice something about them?
Most of them would have to take a salary cut to replace you.
But besides that?
Well, most of them, except for your previously anointed successor, don't work for CBS News.
Bingo and double bingo. I've been bitching for years that this place's bench was weaker than a veal calf in a hailstorm. Now that particular chicken is coming home to roost, and it's not bringing eggs.
Well, it may be bringing ham. Look,
you
Daniel...
You see, here's my problem, Brother Plant.
Uh-huh.
I care too much. I've given too many years, not to CBS News, sir, please, I'm not that stupid, but to the idea of CBS News, the idea of a place that, whether it's owned by Westinghouse or a Viacom or a pack of rabid coon dogs, still maintains a semblance of the standards it was founded on. A place that, no matter who pays its mortgage, still thinks of itself as the house Murrow built.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I have to stay at it a little longer and a little later into life's final segment than Uncle Walter did and put off the yachting and the golf playing until I'm too old to do it, then maybe that's the price I have to pay for keeping that dream alive.
Well, what I'm saying is you could keep it alive doing hard-hitting pieces for 60, and you wouldn't have to spend half your day doing promos for Channel 67 in Western South Dakota.
William,
Somebody has to keep Eye on America, a living, breathing piece of appointment journalism. Somebody has to care about the reality check and the bottom line, otherwise they're just going to turn into gimmicks like Brother Brokaw's In-Depth and Lifelines.
No.
Yeah, hey, you know, listen, sir, just coming back here in D.C. into a real newsroom, a place that breathes the fire of breaking stories and war with press secretaries, I know you see it every day, but it just renews my drive to
go back to that celebrity farm in New York.
Yeah.
Daniel, this game was over the day you let them dye your hair.
On the contrary, sir, this game began the day they let me go gray. I could never win the battle to be glamour boy of the evening news with my dark brooding kind of good looks, but now it's about trust in an uncertain media environment. And that's a tune I was built to play.
All right, Brother Rather, I am behind you all the way, and please don't ask me to demonstrate that support in any way that our fearless leader would notice, okay?
All right, sir. I'll be off your computer in two shakes of a pig snout.
It's fine. I'm just ordering some wine. I'll use Schieffer's desk. Take it easy, Daniel.
You be good, William. Is concern about the vice president a Cheney reaction? Join me tomorrow at 5:30. Now back to you, Steve and Heather.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think we can judge this week's program a success, depending, of course, on how you define success. I don't particularly define it in terms of ratings or winning P-Boy Awards or anything like that. I just define it in terms of getting from one end of the broadcast to the other. And in that definition, this was a blazing success. But this is the end, which means we have to go back to the beginning and do it all. No, it means this program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan. On shortwave at WBCQ, the planet at 7.415 megahertz, if we're lucky. Around the world through Armed Forces Network. And on your computer, whenever you want it, at www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like Beijing breaking the rules for the rest of us, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail@interworld.net. And come on now, say it with me. No attachments, please. Not even on April Fool's Day. Seriously. Especially on April Fool's Day. Oh, and welcome to this edition of the show. I'm glad you could... All right, I really cannot commit to these things. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Guys who made old records couldn't count time either. They said it was 4:42, it was 4:23. So, what have you been doing lately? How's the family? How's the kids? How about that baseball season just about to start, huh? What do you think of that? Unbelievable, isn't it? They still do that? Yeah, I know. Well, Car Talks will be along soon. Anyway, thanks for listening, ladies and gentlemen, and please join me again next week. And in the meantime, won't you give to your own public radio station? I know I do. Thanks so much, and drive safely, everybody.